Hello and welcome to Open Mind UFO Radio. I am your host, Alejandro Rojas, and I am here with Martin Oldfeller Willis.
Old who?
Oldfeller. And now I feel bad about saying that, you know? Oh, that reminds me, because someone had accused me of teasing you and making fun of you and stuff like that. And I say Oldfeller because you were just talking about antiques and stuff like that, which was... It's a lot of fun. I love that topic. And then I said this, and I was like, oh, no, that person's going to think I'm being mean to Martin again.
No, actually, I take that remark well, because I am a lover of antiques, which is kind of a – antiques and UFOs don't really mix, but unless you're
– In a way,
you know,
I guess.
You want to try to – Ancient aliens? I don't know. Maybe.
Well, even 1947 when all those, you know – The government was looking into UFOs. That was way before my time. So that's kind of antique-ish to me.
It is. But anyway, having fun here in New Hampshire, getting ready for an estate sale. So finding some real goodies, having a good time.
That's awesome. Yeah. That's fun. And I should say, and I'm going to take this opportunity to say that I certainly do not intend to disparage or make fun of you at all, Martin. In fact, just the fact that I have you on my show demonstrates that very, very, very high level of respect. I'm having fun, and I hope nobody feels like, you know, I'm making fun of Martin or making him look badly. I'm certainly not trying to, because I think the world of Martin Willis. And you know, it's great to take the chance to say, I think Martin Willis is super duper awesome, and I really love talking UFOs with you. So it's a pleasure to talk with you every week. So,
wow.
I hope you never have felt that I've made fun of you. I haven't meant to.
No.
Yeah.
No, all in good fun, and you know, I'm speechless. That's very nice.
Really?
Of you.
See, and the awkward pauses and stuff, that's fun. That's charming. That's not a bad thing. In my eyes, I don't feel it as a bad thing.
Yeah, on my own show, I was known to do awkward well, you know, way back.
Yeah.
So, it takes a certain knack.
It
you know?
Does, and it's fun these days.
Yeah.
So, moving on. Let's see. Well, let me tell them about my guest. Oh, this is an exciting show, people. You're going to love this. My guest is retired Colonel Dr. John Alexander. And some people may be going, oh, man, that's a disinformation dude, man. But you know what is funny? And what we're going to be talking about is also exciting. A topic that people love, which is the Skinwalker Ranch. That's this ranch in Utah, you know, that was purchased by Robert Bigelow, who's a real estate mogul out of Las Vegas, who now is running Bigelow Aerospace and actually has a component on the International Space Station. He's also very much a UFO enthusiast into the topic. He's funded a lot of UFO investigations and paranormal type of investigations, including investigating this strange ranch in Utah, which is a favorite topic of many people. And John Alexander, who's been friends with Mr. Bigelow for a very long time, we'll talk about how that friendship started in this interview, was on the ranch and part of that whole investigation. So we'll talk to John about that. In fact, I have an interview on YouTube with him about the ranch. It's one of our most viewed YouTube videos. And so I thought that would be a lot of fun, because there's been some stories about the ranch in the news lately. And I thought it'd be fun to talk to John about it.
Right. And it's sold, right?
It did sell, yeah. That's what those stories were. And funny enough, John didn't even realize that, but it has sold, so Bigelow does not own it anymore. And these stories essentially were about people trying to get on the ranch and everything, and these people are harassed by people. So I think the story headline said something like paranormal turns into prosecutable because they're really getting upset at these people trying to come onto their land and look for UFOs
Wow.
and weirdness. Yeah.
Yeah, I can see that happening. And no trespassing is no trespassing, you know, and
Exactly.
they can throw the law at them for sure.
Yep, or they could shoot him.
They actually, there are, I think they have to be breaking into a home to shoot.
Well,
I don't
and
know.
there's like
Anyway,
a
the law
make
is
my
probably vary
day.
in different states.
Yeah, you're right. But John is also speaking at the UFO Congress, and that's what's funny. People call him a disinformationist because he was in the army and in army intelligence, and he looked into UFOs and other paranormal phenomena while he was in there, and because he feels that the government doesn't have much in the way of secrets, at least any organized sort of investigation, that people think he's a disinformation person. But he's into a lot of different stuff, as we'll find out in this interview. And on his lecture at the UFO Congress, where he's going to talk about his own sighting and the other paranormal phenomena that he feels are related to his sighting and this field, which I think is going to be fascinating. So it's great. And you know what? To his in his defense, all of these conspiracies people have, there's really no proof to point to any of it. There's conjecture. There's a few. There are some witnesses and stories. I think that we've got a really good series going right now, and I'm really excited about our next UFO magazine, Open Minds UFO magazine, we're going to be putting on YouTube, because we're delving into the files of where are these UFO investigations going, and I think that's fascinating. There's some evidence and proof, but have you ever had him on your show?
I have, yes, and I just remember it being a really good show, and I didn't. I thought I was going to get some flack about the disinformation aspect of our conversation that could be construed. Someone could say it was, but I didn't get the bad feedback like I expected, actually. So he's intelligent, an
Very.
interesting man. Yeah.
Yeah, a very unique insight. And so I really love talking to the guy, especially about Skinwalker. This topic is a lot of fun. So I think people are going to really love this. But before we do that, how about we get into some UFO news? I got a doozy today, but you start us off.
I will. This, and I sure hope we didn't do this last week, but if we did, it wasn't posted on your site yet. This is about a strange, luminous UFO caught on a security camera in England. The story was written by Alejandro Rojas, and it talks about this odd luminous orb, and I agree, I would consider it that. It had to do with a camera that was like a security type camera, and it was also motion triggered. They think their cat Alfie might have triggered it, actually. This happened while they were gone. So it's about, I think it's like 42 seconds long or something like that. And what you do see is you see this orb go through the rooftops or, you know, by the rooftops, and then it changes direction, comes back. Now, I know from having one of these IP cameras myself that you can, with a motion sensor, you can get some weird images from insects and things like that. But this certainly is no insect. And when it changes direction and comes back, it really. That was the part that was, wow, that was an amazing video. And I strongly suggest to the listener check that video out. It's right on Open Minds TV under one of the links called Security Camera Something. UFO
Strange,
caught on security camera.
yeah, strange luminous UFO caught on security camera in England. And yeah, this one was weird. I think I mentioned it a bit on the last one, but I hadn't written the story, so there was more information, such as I misspoke. It wasn't the cat. They said, I love this quote too. They said, it couldn't have been our cat, Alfie, as he was in the cattery while we were on holiday.
I guess I missed that.
Yeah. Well, that's
The
because
cattery. They have catteries over there.
Yeah.
Wow.
That's kind of neat,
Wow.
huh? A cattery.
Yeah.
But
And do they have doggeries too?
I don't know. It would be puppery. I would. Ooh, that would be good. A puppery for little puppies. That'd be
Popery,
cuter.
puppery.
But
Yeah, puppers.
what's great is now I also have, which I didn't have, is the investigation. So John Turnbull was the investigator. He's the MUFON National Director for Great Britain, and he closed it as insufficient data. Although I think that, I don't know, I think you could argue unknown might have been good, because he essentially said that he interviewed the people, he looked at the video, he said there's clearly a bright white object that appears to be under some sort of control, and it comes back, changes direction, and has sort of a trail that it's leaving. So he can't classify it as conventional, and since he is unable to elucidate any further, he closed it as an insufficient data. So that is interesting. People have commented since, and some people have commented that the object is so far away it's hard to tell if it was a drone or not. And I suppose I agree. If there's anything it could be, it could possibly be some sort of quadcopter or something. But it is clearly behind the houses and then comes around in front of them, which is pretty odd. A very odd video, I think.
Yeah, I don't know. It doesn't seem drone-like to me, but that may be just my,
It's only one
misunderstanding of what a
light.
drone is.
Yeah,
Yeah.
so I would agree with you. I didn't get that feeling at first, but I suppose it's possible. That's right. So yeah, that's a good one. Good one, dude. Good one.
All right. Yeah.
All right. Yeah, high five. This is another good one, so I'm really excited about this one. I pounded this out and did, was rushing to get this out, this story. And this is the WikiLeaks. So if anybody saw the debate this weekend, they were talking about some new WikiLeaks email. They were, well, they weren't so shocking. One headline I read, which was really funny, is that the emails showed that Hillary was boring or something, because these were a lot of more Democratic emails that were posted, including emails from Podesta, John Podesta. Now, you and I, of course, have talked about Podesta quite a bit because he is Hillary's campaign manager. He used to work for Obama as an advisor. He was Obama's transition manager when Obama took over the White House, 8 years ago now. And so, very prominent figure. He was also the chief of staff for the Clintons. And he is very into UFOs, has been for a long time. Even during this campaign, he's kind of challenged people for a while to ask Hillary about UFOs. And he talked about UFOs in some of his tweets. He's a tweeter. But his emails got hacked, and now we know, we do know, at least the law enforcement has, finally made it official that yes, it was Russia who has been doing these hacking of the Democratic Party's emails. And so they did release some of his emails, again, mostly boring. And but there are a suite of emails to him regarding UFOs. Most of these are pretty boring, just people, either UFO references in the news, like there's a reference to a missile test that, people mistook for a UFO, a thing about Kucinich, also some guy talking about terrorism and some other things. One guy, this was kind of sad, who was kind of getting, he was upset about German immigration. He stated, "Germany's immigration disaster deniers have as much credibility as alien abductees spirited away in a UFO with Bigfoot at the controls." So that was one of the funny comments. There's kind of an odd one. Of course, some people believe this. I think it's kind of odd personally. There's some guy who's writing, "Hey, Podesta," and he CC'd McCain and some other people. And he's like, "You got to tell Hillary, she's got the climate change thing all wrong."
Oh, yeah, I saw that.
You saw this? It's actually Nibiru, or Planet X, which comes around every 3,600 years or so, and its gravity is pulling on our planet. We can't see it now because it's in the sun's glare. So I guess if the astronomers would just kind of cover their eyes from the sun's glare, they'd be, "Oh, look, there it is. There's Nibiru." So maybe that would help. But that was kind of a funny one. But one that is being made a big deal about, which is much less of a big deal than people think, is this one from Edgar Mitchell. And this is kind of funny because this demonstrates how the UK tabloids are so terrible at reporting news. They're awful, and they get it, they oversensationalize and are just completely misleading and inaccurate. Their headline is, "Revealed, Hillary Clinton had secret meetings with NASA astronaut to discuss aliens." Completely, absolutely false. So, and I have links to the actual emails so you can look at them. What had happened was, there is an email to John Podesta requesting a meeting with Edgar Mitchell. Now, it makes it look like the email is from Edgar Mitchell. However, if you look at the email address and you follow that, you find that it's actually from a woman named Terry Mansfield. And she's somewhat, I mean, some of you might have heard of her. She's a UFO researcher. Her website says that they educate humans about work with our nonviolent, obedient to God extraterrestrial intelligence from contiguous universe whose mission is to work with our scientists to bring zero point energy here for the purpose of extending life on our fragile Earth. So a little fringe, wow. You know, she's kind of, and she says they only fundraise with billionaires. So yeah, which is kind of interesting. Anyway, that's who the email came from, either her or her colleague. She works with Suzanne. And so the email is requesting a meeting to talk about zero-point energy with Edgar Mitchell. Now, the question was, did Edgar Mitchell know they sent this email? He probably did. He's into this kind of stuff. They're the type of people he hung out with. So he probably did. But did Podesta reply? That's something we did not know. And so that's why it was ridiculous that they assumed that there was some sort of meeting, because it doesn't look like Podesta replied at all. And interesting enough, Grant Cameroon, who you had on your show recently, he actually did some research this morning, and we've been talking on Facebook, and he got a hold of Terry Mansfield, and they said, yeah, Edgar Mitchell did ask us to send the email, but we never got a reply, and there was no meeting. So no meeting actually happened.
Wow.
Oh, and I misspoke. Now, let me ask. I guess they did talk with Podesta's aide a little bit. And so there was a little bit of conversation, but a meeting never happened. Yes, go ahead. Sorry.
I see. Oh, that's all right. I was just wondering, whatever possessed you to call him Grant Cameroon?
I'm glad you asked. No, I'm just joking around because, Martin, of course, you had him on your show recently, and you commented about how he calls me Alejandro.
That's right.
I've been doing the show now for years. It used to be UFO Think Tank, but now it's Open Mind UFO Radio. And if you can go back, even when I did my first show with him, which is probably 2000, at least 7, 8 years ago, you can go listen, and he calls me Alejandro. And even at that point, I had already known him for many, many years and been in pretty close contact. I mean, sometimes we talk more than others, but he's always called me that. And I kind of laugh, and I kind of tell him, say that that's kind of maybe because he's Canadian and it's kind of French Canadian, because it's Alejandro. Almost sounds like a little French kind of flair there.
Yeah.
So it's just
that's
joking.
Very gracious of you, yes.
But I do know his name is Cameron and not Cameroon.
Yes.
I was just being silly there. So there's not a whole lot to that one. I mean, Edgar Mitchell wanted to meet with John Podesta. No big surprise. We all think that would be cool. But here's what's cool, and the Wall Street Journal actually wrote about these. By the way, I should mention Shepard Johnson did the research to find those other files for us at OpenMind. So thank you to Shepard. But the Wall Street Journal did a story about some of the other ones that are actually much more interesting. And these are from Tom DeLong.
Hmm.
So Tom DeLong is a rock star. You know, he was with Blink-182. And, you know, actually Jason and Maureen, when they were with Open Minds, interviewed Tom DeLong, and we've got that at Open Minds. But he's super into UFOs. A lot of people a few months ago made a big deal because he was making a lot of claims about knowing all these people and all this, you know, deep throat contacts who know about UFOs. Mm-hmm. And he released in July of 2015 a photo of him interviewing Podesta, which many of us, like myself, Lee Spiegel, others who have been dying to interview John Podesta about UFOs, were extremely jealous and thinking, why Tom DeLong? Why is he talking to Tom DeLong? But we have yet to see this interview. Tom DeLong says it's going to be part of a documentary he's going to release. So we know he did talk with Podesta. And in these WikiLeaks are a couple emails from Tom DeLong. One of them is kind of an update about what's going on. It's a few months after the interview in October. Tom DeLong is saying, here's the update. I've been talking with Spielberg's people and some others about what we're going to do. I'm getting my books and stuff out. And then he says, I would like to meet with you and bring two very important people that essentially have some insight into UFOs. Doesn't look like Podesta ever replied to this email. But the more interesting email is from January 25th of this year. And the subject is General McCasland. And Tom DeLong writes, he mentioned he's a skeptic. He's not. I've been working with him for 4 months. I just got done giving him a 4-hour presentation on the entire project a few weeks ago. Trust me, the advice has already been happening on how to do all of this. He just has to say that out loud, but he is very, very aware as he was in charge of all that stuff. When Roswell crashed, they shipped it to the laboratory at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. General McCasland was in charge of that exact laboratory up to a couple years ago. He not only knows what I'm trying to achieve, he helped assemble my advisory team. He's a very important man. So, this General McCasland is Major General William McCasland, and he was the commander of the U.S. Air Force's research laboratories at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. In fact, the Air Force site doesn't say he was. It says he is. So, maybe he was in charge of it up until recently, and they haven't updated it. But, yeah, he is actually a very important person. Wright-Patterson, of course, is where Project Blue Book was and all of the Air Force UFO investigations, and people do feel, you know, maybe they took the Roswell craft there. So if this General McCasland does have something more to say about UFOs that he has not told the public, that is actually very, very interesting. So hopefully... you know, it could be that Tom did not want that name to get out and the name of his contact to get out. I'm sure somebody's hopefully going to be asking McCasland what he had to say, and maybe he'll have a comment, especially since the Wall Street Journal wrote about this. But that seems to be the most promising or most interesting of all the WikiLeaks out there regarding UFOs. But from what I can gather, these are all of the UFO-related WikiLeaks that came out recently. And that last one, pretty interesting, huh?
I'll say. Yeah, that's great. Well, that would be really something. It's funny. It's someone like Tom DeLong, because of his fame, may actually get some traction and get somewhere.
Yeah, I mean, according to him... You know, he's told a lot of stories. He hasn't produced much to back up his stories, but he says, you know, when he got into this, it was some people who worked at Area 51 that went to him because he's famous, and that's what really got him connected with some of his great contacts with some I guess really good information. So, yeah, you're right. It could be that he really does have some really great stuff. But so far, all he's released a book that's nonfiction that he says is based on some of the real stuff, but we don't know what's real or not. So, pretty
No, it is
interesting.
fiction. It is fiction, you
Yeah,
mean.
it is
Yeah.
fiction. Right. Oh, did I
Right.
say nonfiction? Yeah, it's
Right.
fiction based on nonfiction, according to him. So, yeah, that I think is an interesting email. I like the last one.
Yeah, awesome.
You probably like the Nibiru one, right?
Yeah, that one really cracked me up. That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All righty. So you got anything else, buddy?
I think I'm just about done.
All right. Well, thank you for taking the time out because I know you're really busy today with your antiquing. But thanks for taking the time to talk some UFO news with us, buddy.
Yeah, always a pleasure.
Okay, well, let's go ahead and talk to retired Colonel Dr. John Alexander. I am very happy to have back on the show John Alexander. Hello, sir.
Well, Alejandro, great to talk to you again.
Yeah, it's always fun and interesting to talk to you. Of course, there's always a little bit of controversy. Even, you'll be speaking at the UFO Congress coming up because you're known as, by some, although practically everybody who's been in the military, people believe that they're part of some kind of disinformation scandal.
Well, we're getting a greater dose of that with the current election cycle as well.
Yeah.
Truth no longer matters.
Yeah, unfortunately, conspiracy theories kind of reign supreme, especially the most dubious of them. Although it seems like a bit, one of the reasons people feel that way is 'cause you don't feel there's this, there's so much a conspiracy of hidden secrecy as much of a conspiracy of kind of ineptitude or just inability to deal with UFOs and things like that. But it seems like you kind of relish it a bit. You kind of like setting the record straight to people.
Great. As first line in my book is UFOs are real.
Right.
And what I'm going to be talking about at the upcoming conference is just the complexity that we have run into in trying to investigate these phenomena.
And when you say you, oh, and super excited about your talk, because you're also going to be talking about one of your recent experiences. And is this your first UFO sighting or just kind of most spectacular?
I'm not sure either, but it is the most recent. I wrote in the book, I had one, but it's very, very minor as most UFO sightings go. The significance of this is the proximity to the individual who was there telling me, I think something might happen, and there we are.
So yeah, this ought to be your talk ought to be really exciting. I'm very excited about it. But today I want to talk about the Skinwalker Ranch because you got to be participate in the research of this mysterious ranch because you of your friendship with Bog Bigelow and participation in his National Institute for Discovery Sciences. I guess to start off with this, when did you first meet Bob Bigelow?
Oh, that goes back in antiquity. There was a conference, some may remember, and at MIT that John Mack and the guy from MIT were holding, and he showed up there. That was more of like a handshake. And then it was a few years later, which I'm trying to think, it probably 88, 89. I must have been in the 88 time frame, and I was hosting a small meeting at my house. Talk of people, some would be familiar with the community, others not, but interested in alternative energy and the zero point energy in particular. And Bob, out of the blue, just called me and said, "What are you doing? I've heard about you." And so then he flew over and we had a conversation. And about that time, I left Los Alamos National Lab and then went over to work for NIDS. When it gets to Skinwalker, I was actually the first person to from NIDS to spend the night there, and I was there the day that he actually bought the ranch.
Mm-hmm. So when did you first hear about the ranch then, and what did you hear?
Well, just some very generic rumors that there was a place in Utah where very strange kinds of things happened. And that the rancher, like Terry is pretty well known now, but basically wanted to get out. It was harassing his family so badly, and they were taking a lot of heat from the local community. They were not Mormon, and that area really, you know, yeah, they do discriminate. As I say, family was having a lot of trouble. Well, they had had a recent incident. Most of these, by the way, are written up, and I did some in my book on UFOs, but Skinwalker Ranch by George Knapp and Colm Kelleher. But this is one in which he had some young boys out there and dogs, as most ranchers do. And these dogs kept jumping up and snapping at these blue balls that were, you know, floating in the air around there. And what happened was I did it, and the balls kept floating away, and the dogs followed them, snapping and that, and totally disappeared. There were three dogs. And then they never came home. And then the following day, Terry went out looking, because it was very unusual that the dogs wouldn't return to get fed, if nothing else. And he found three puddles of looked like fat on the ground, and he believed that that was the remnants of the dog. And they were very concerned that his kids might, you know, encounter the same thing, and trying to tease or follow balls, and took them to be potentially quite dangerous.
Mm-hmm. Now, was anything left when you got to the site then? Were you able to see any of this residue?
Not from that particular incident, but there are so many incidents.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, a number that happened when our investigators were there. I would say, be honest, I was up at the ranch a number of times after that, and frankly, personally, had not seen any particular incident. But there were people, and some will know Eric, who seemed to be kind of ultra sensitive. And a lot of things happened around him. So it, not only do you have a geographic area that has, a huge number of incidents that are just totally unexplainable, but there does seem to be a certain personality dependence as well, influence on the area or what happens.
You probably were... Since you were the first there, I'm assuming you got to interview the family?
Oh, yeah. We knew them quite well. And as you know, NIDS had a science advisory board that was highly respectable. And they came in and were very gracious and very open about the events that were going on there.
Mm-hmm.
And totally did not, no understanding of how these things could happen. They did indicate that it did not originate with them, that strange things have been going on there. And Bob had talked to the Native American tribes in the area, and this was sort of known as a place that they did not want to go to, that bad things could happen there.
Mm-hmm. So Did you advise then, did you recommend that Bob Bigelow purchase the land and do further studies?
No, that was his decision. That's where he makes decisions anyway. But I thought that maybe we could, since incidents happen at such a continuous rate that it offered the possibility of being, basically a field laboratory. Now the NIDS was designed to look at two specific areas. UFOs is one, continuation of consciousness beyond bodily death was the other. So this fit in quite well, and with the charter and the things that Bob was interested in at that time. And so we, picked it up. You had a willing thing. Now, one of the things I want to emphasize, though, this was, in fact, and I think continues to be, a working ranch. So it also has to do with just raising cattle. So a lot of people like to say, oh, wasted, I think, was around $250,000 on it. I says, no, you're picking up a working ranch that continues to have value.
So, did you find the family convincing yourself?
Oh, they were very open and very convincing. And of course, the thing beyond that was the number of incidents that happened with our observers and others on site. So we're not strictly relying on, personal stories by an individual. There's many, many stories and large number of witnesses, physical evidence that pretty hard to deny, and pretty hard to explain under any set of circumstances.
When Bob purchased the ranch, I would imagine, and you can let me know whether I'm right or not, there might have been, was there any hesitation? Was there kind of like, wow, he bought this place. What if we're going to put all these resources into it? What if nothing happens? At the beginning, were people a little nervous that way?
Oh, not that I'm aware of. Things now, having said that, one of the things about the ranch, and I think why they really gave up the, continuous observation, was that it was a bit cyclical, if you will. In other words, there would be periods of intense activity and then other periods where virtually nothing would happen. So, and the other thing, one of the, remember my book, I wrote about what I call precognitive sentient phenomena. And it actually came from our observation at the ranch. And I guess colloquially, a lot of folklore revolves around the trickster. In other words, that there's phenomena that happen, but there's something behind it that seems to have, a tricking kind of attributes to it. And this shows up throughout literature, for centuries. But the reason I was looking at it is that, as you know, we instrumented the ranch, had various kinds of sensors. We had video and doing, monitoring 24/7, reviewing everything that happens. And the phenomena had, it seemed like, the ability to function just outside of wherever the sensors were. Meaning, and this is why I came to precognitive, it seemed to know whatever it was, and it was in charge, if you will, but it knew what we were going to do when we were presented with various phenomena. And every time we would say, we would adjust to it and say, oh, okay, let's study that. And every time he did, it would shift slightly. Like it was saying, oh, you like that? Try this. And you get something totally unexpected. Often, for instance, like just off camera or something of that nature.
Can you remember an incident that was kind of an example of this?
Well, there's a classic one written to in the book, and one in which we had four poles. As I said, we had set up surveillance, and what happened? You had video cameras on top of 20-foot poles, all looking to the west. And in this case, the poles further to the east could see the poles to the west. And what happened was that, okay, so in order to install the cameras, you had wires that were, you know, coming from the camera down to the ground. You had probably half a roll of duct tape on each of the poles just holding the wires in. As you got close to the ground, you had PVC piping and U-clamps that held the wires down, and then they went underground because as a working ranch, you still had cattle running around there. And this ran back to a the housing where we stayed. And so you had time lapse on a second and a third between each frame, but again, running 24/7. And this phenomenal incident that happens, we know that all of a sudden, camera, I'll just call it camera one, the one further to the west, stops recording. And the camera to the east behind it does not record anything. Now, not only did the camera stop recording, the wires at the top of the 20-foot pole were pulled loose. There was a chunk of about 3 foot of wire in between that were missing. And then the PVC that held the U-clamps that held the PVC pipe had been pulled loose. And so we went in and looked at the camera that was staring at the camera where the incident had taken place. And coincidentally, the cattle had been milling around the pole at that time. Importantly, absolutely nothing showed up. Mm-hmm. And what we knew, the reason the cattle location was important, we knew that if anybody approached the cattle or anything came in there, they would always scatter. In this case, they hadn't. And we know from the time that the wires were pulled loose when the recording stopped, so we knew where to look. And absolutely nothing of any of the things that we described show up on the camera that was facing it and should have recorded the entire incident.
Mm-hmm. So, I mean, what are your thoughts on that? So, I mean, you did have video footage of the pool. You just couldn't see the wires.
Nothing happened. That's the point.
Uh-huh.
I mean, we should have been able to see if somebody climbed up the pole and we'd have, you know, again, 20 feet or so and jerked it loose. You should have seen whatever went up there. Mm-hmm. You should have seen whatever cut this, yard long chunk of wire out of the middle. You should have seen something pull the U-clamps and the PVC loose. See, again, not only did we not see that, we also did not see the cattle move. And they certainly, if anybody had done it, you know, or any normal thing had done that, they would have scattered and mm-hmm. didn't.
Yeah, so pretty strange stuff. Now, what do you remember, when did, once the investigation began, NIDS investigation, did strange stories then start coming very quickly? Did they begin experiencing?
I'm not sure. What do you mean? We had strange stories. We picked up the ranch to go back. You mean our incidents?
Exactly. So the investigators, did they begin experiencing things?
Well, one of the things I want to emphasize, you know, I had a little go-round with Jesse Ventura and his conspiracy theory show that he did about Skinwalker Ranch. And he asked me, could I get him on the ranch, and I said no. And the other thing was, by the way, you'd be quite bored. My point here is that, yes, a lot of very phenomenal incidents happened. But when you amortize that over 6 years, it is not like, oh, something happens every night. I understand that the people up there are still being harassed with the folks trying to sneak in and whatnot. So it wasn't happening on a continuous basis. The ones that did happen were very, very dramatic and, you know, literally unexplainable. But it's not like you sit out there and every hour some unusual thing or UFO pops in or lights appear or various kind of apparitions or what I call creepy crawlers show up. All of those things happened. But again, you spread that over the 6 years that the observations, that our observations alone. Some of the incidents had happened to Terry and his family before, and some of the stories even predate Terry.
Mm-hmm. So the anomalous lights, for instance, did that occur? Were any of those being able to be recorded or seen by the NIDS investigators?
There were various things that were seen. I don't recall blue bulbs. I think we saw luminous lights on occasion. Some of it, Eric recorded or reported an incident out in the trees, which were, there was, Russian olives further to the west in a building out there. And he talked about something moving through the trees akin to what you saw in the Predator movie, you know, where what you really see is the distortion, not, firm details of a specific object.
Mm-hmm. And Eric, that's Dr. Eric Davis, is that correct?
If he chooses to be known, he's pretty well known, yeah.
Yeah, I think he's even done a few, not many, but a few interviews regarding
he's a legitimate astrophysicist, works for Help Put Off now, and does a lot of work in anomalies, but a very credible guy. Mm-hmm. I would emphasize one of the things that was different about NIDS is that most of the observers that we had up there all had at least one doctorate. In one case, the guy was a double doctorate at that. Highly trained researchers and, interested in the phenomena.
Mm-hmm.
Some of them fundamentally skeptical because, as I say, you run up against trying to explain how any of these things could occur, and it just literally defies explanation.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's interesting, and I saw this on a mainstream show, but he also talked about this, I believe, at a MUFON symposium a few years ago, and we've talked to him about it. I don't know that we have anything published on it, but Eric, Dr. Davis, who you're referring to, has talked about, witnessing one of the most bizarre incidents happened during the study. And I was wondering if you could recall.
I don't know, but bizarre is relative in this case.
Right.
Even orders of magnitude of bizarre. I mean, the one I described about the camera, I think, is one of the strangest, where the damn thing was actually instrumented and yet recorded nothing.
Mm-hmm. And I think it was Davis talking about sort of a portal or something they had seen.
Well, we're a bit into conjecture at that point, but a lot of us did sort of think that. And that part of the folklore is that there are, and I'm not sure if you're talking about the one where something came up out of a hole or there were other instances where holes were reported, like in the sky, with things dropping down, like UFOs and sounds coming out of the sky. That portal, if you will, the New Age vernacular is pretty generic.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I believe this was a story where something came out of the ground, some sort of...
Okay, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm quite familiar with that one. Again, there were two observers. Just to lay it out, mm-hmm. the ranch itself is mostly very flat, open, but to the north, there's an escarpment that rises a couple of hundred feet. And so one of the things we would do is post people. In fact, when I mentioned the first night that I stayed there, that's what I did, was to climb up on this escarpment where you could look down and see most of the ranch. In this case, there was a dirt road that was running from east to west at the bottom of the escarpment. One of the things that happened, that I believe it was around 2 or 3 in the morning, they were getting ready to close up shop, and looked down and they saw this faint glow of light that appeared, like slightly above the ground. The guess is, I think it was around 3 feet or so, actually above the ground. And then the light sort of expanded to a wider circumference, and then all of a sudden something with a head and shoulders popped up out of that, pulled itself out, jumped down as if on the ground, and went running off. Now, this was observed from a few hundred feet away. Again, they're up above looking down at the incident happened. This dirt road that I mentioned was very dusty, and one of the interesting things, went down to where they saw it happen, and there were no footprints.
Mm-hmm. Very, very strange. And I'm sure you felt, I would assume you felt that these reports were credible.
Yeah, these are our guys.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're not talking about civilian reports coming in and whatnot. These were people who worked with us. That happened to have been one civilian researcher who came in from outside NIDS, but somebody we implicitly trusted, and they were using some pretty good night vision equipment at the time. But again, it depends on which events, but several of them had the one I talked about with something moving through the branches of the olive tree, and Eric perceived a message, and this is more like a telepathic inference, that said, "We are watching you."
Wow.
No inference as to who we are or what that meant or what happens if they do actions other than watching or what that might mean. I would say we, to the best of my knowledge, never had an incident in which humans were directly threatened or injured.
Mm-hmm.
Now, animals did get injured, and there's a specific case of cattle mutilation that, again, defies explanation. And if you want, we can discuss that one.
Yeah, great. Go ahead and describe that event.
Yeah, well, this one is truly amazing because it's calving season. This does start with Terry. As I said, it's a working ranch, so it's a bright, sunny day. Again, the landscape in this area is totally open, so you can see for quite a ways. So he goes in his truck, and he finds a mother and a newborn calf. And so the procedure is to weigh the calf, take data, and then you put a tag in the calf's ear that it, and with the mother. So it's identified you know, what that relationship is. So he does that, and he drives a few hundred meters, but again, straight line, totally visible, finds another newborn calf, and he tags that and weighs that. Interim times, maybe between half hour, 45 minutes, and he comes back, and the first cow is just beside herself, and calf one is dead. Not only is it dead, the ear has, with the tag, has been sliced off. Looks like something extremely sharp had done that. It had been eviscerated and exsanguinated. There was about, now the remains were about 20 pounds less than what it had weighed 20 minutes ago. We sent, we had George Annette, who was a DVM, among things, up to the ranch that day. We had protected the carcass to make sure nothing happened to it. Again, there were a lot of slicing, and one bone was moved out. Looked like some nicks from a sharp knife on it. But one of the things I had them do, people said, oh, simple, it was bled out and just, you know, blood went into the ground. So I suggested, and they went to a nearby slaughterhouse and got a few quarts of blood and came back in the area, and we just poured it on the ground to see what would happen. And weeks later, you could go by and say, oh, that's where the blood was poured on the ground. Mm-hmm. Yet at the point of the exsanguinated calf, no marks whatsoever. And we looked at, you know, every possibility of predation. Not the way big bears kill, not the way big cats, and there are a few in the area. But there were no known predators that could have carried this out. One of the hypotheses was that it might be human. And, you know, they probably still shoot cattle rustlers. But the point is that, again, this is broad daylight, mid-morning, totally open visibility. Nobody in their right mind is, you know, going to sneak across an open field and cut up somebody's calf like that.
Mm-hmm. And I mean, being exsanguinated, like you said, the blood being taken, I mean, it would have had
totally,
to been
yeah.
collected and then removed,
right?
Which would have been a difficult
that
process.
That is the point. It wasn't just drained where it went into the ground, and that's why I had the experiment run pouring blood on the ground to see what it did look like, and had pretty good comparative analysis of that.
Mm-hmm. So how did this, I mean, what was your reaction to all of this? Did this change your worldview? Did it have, I would imagine this had to be pretty shocking for people.
Well, it changed not my worldview, no. But then I have a pretty broad worldview, and I've been involved in phenomena for decades and have seen some really, really strange things in other locations. Certainly this was one of the more highly concentrated areas and ones in which you had this variety of phenomena that were occurring and defying, you know, scientific explanation and attempts to do research. That's why I said it was a precognitive sentient phenomena. It knew what we were going to do. It seemed to know how we would respond and what kinds of research we would attempt to do, and yet present things that were ineffable.
Mm-hmm. And, I mean, this is a group of scientists, for the most part, very intelligent people that
right.
were outsmarted essentially by some unknown phenomena.
Yeah, it's in charge. Mm-hmm. Whatever it is, it's in charge.
Yeah, I mean,
that may be one of the more scary aspects.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I would imagine, like Dr. Davis, for instance, wrote a paper on teleportation for the Air Force. I think a lot of people assume his experiences with the ranch kind of influenced his thinking, or at least opened his mind about, you know, some possibilities and what physics is capable of. Did any of those scientists express, you know, any emotional reaction, or, you know, just I would imagine, especially for someone who isn't as familiar with paranormal as yourself, even myself, well, if I had experienced that, I mean, it would really leave a mark.
Yeah, well, it certainly left a mark. I mean, there's no doubt about that. As you know, I've been seeing the stuff in voodoo in Africa and things that just cannot be explained as well. A lot in South America and dealing with shamans in the Amazon and various incidents in Brazil. So I got to remind that, again, we had the Science Advisory Board that was world-class by any standard. Now, of course, we selected people who were open to the possibility of phenomena. Some of them were probably not as experienced, with others like Jacques Vallée, who this sort of tip in with a passport to Magonia. It just fit in. It's a bunch of pieces to a much, much larger puzzle.
Mm-hmm. So everybody was pretty professional about it. Nobody kind of...
Oh, very much, yeah.
Nobody lost their composure.
No, but again, this was a highly select body was being exposed to a number of phenomena and other cases that NIDS was looking into as well. I mean, if they had not been open-minded about the phenomena, they would not have been invited to the board. So that kind of goes without saying. Now, I think if you went to the National Academy of Science and presented this, they'd tell you you were crazy. I mean, first of all, you wouldn't even get them to look, which is, I think, part of the problem, is that when you have phenomena that seem to lie outside normally accepted bounds, it's just a priori dismissed. I would also, you know, one of my pet peeves, looking at this on a global basis, that's true in the West, but there are other societies, even those that are very Western-oriented, highly well educated, who are much more accepting of these various phenomena.
So, in all, do you feel as a group, the scientific board and Bob Bigelow and yourself, I mean, because it was one step ahead, was the experiment a failure in not being able to record phenomena, or how do you feel people felt about that?
I could never say it was a failure. And that was because we did have so many observations. It also means, no, we did not come up with the answer. And I, you know, as you know, the last paragraph of my UFO book, which I think is directly related, says that, I don't think we're at the point of asking the right questions. I think that what we have is so terribly complex that it is beyond our imagination, and that when we attempt to, you know, do research projects, it's almost laughable. The other problem is it is very difficult to get the best and brightest minds. I'm very familiar with the UFO community. I think many of them are very well-meaning, but unfortunately, often not qualified to, you know, get into these scientific areas. That said, if the PSP is right, it wouldn't matter anyway.
Well, and even though some individuals are capable and intelligent, any serious study requires organization and resources. And that's something that unfortunately doesn't seem to happen, especially when people are self-guided and have just different ideas about how to go about the research.
Well, it's that, and quite frankly, funding is potentially another issue. I use the Large Hadron Collider as an example. Globally, we put over $18 billion into that, looking for the God particle. Found the Higgs boson, and then went from there to say, "Whoops, that wasn't it." And then we found petaquarks. But we have this mechanical model of the universe that says if we cut things into smaller and smaller parts, we will eventually, find the essential building block. It does not appear to take into account the role of consciousness, or a multiverse. We have multidimensional universes that are interacting from time to time.
Yeah, limited by what is known often, it seems.
Well, the problem, from a scientific perspective, is, in my view, the problem is that we start with the assumption that, it's a materialistic universe, and we do not, in general, accept even the possibility of spiritual interaction. And I think that's a fundamental mistake.
By a spiritual interaction, do you mean kind of like an unknown force, but a force that is ever present, I suppose, at least in the human body, or?
Well, there are several aspects to that. As you know, my doctorate, I worked in thanatology and looking at near-death experiences, and again, the continuation of consciousness beyond bodily death. And I think the evidence in favor is extremely strong. But again, when I've traveled the world, you come to societies that talk about interaction with spiritual beings that guide the entire life and interact with them, sometimes on a very physical plane. Again, Western world, we tend to disregard that without even accepting the possibility. You do run into, and I don't want to get into religious arguments about, what does that mean? Is there a soul? And how does that fit into the process? But I think there are pieces to that puzzle that are associated.
Or and along the lines of what you referred to earlier with the ranch, a sort of non-physical intelligence or consciousness.
Yeah, and the reason I use precognitive sentient is that, like I said, it was so smart that it knew what we were going to do, and clearly intelligent and clearly in control.
Well, and some theoretical physicists do theorize on possible forces we're not aware of, or even particles we're not aware of that could make up and explain some of this and allow for non-physical consciousness and
Well, there are folks who are working particularly on quantum mechanics and trying to explain what that is, much to their frustration, because they never quite get it. But again, the basic, if you start with a premise that everything is material and can be cut up into smaller and smaller parts, that really limits your options when you get to explaining the veridical observations that take place and in daily life. I mean, near-death experiences, for instance. In the U.S., there are millions of people who have had these experiences. And it's only, kind of one example. You have others. We used to teach psychokinesis. No physical way to explain the energy necessary to cause that to occur. From ghosts to, pick your phenomena. There's some pretty hard evidence for all of those things.
Speaking of, you know, measurements and things like that, was there any success or regularity to maybe such as the use of Geiger counters or EMF, or were you able to measure anything like that that you felt was related to the phenomena?
Oh, yeah. One of the applications we had were various EMF meters and things of that nature went out there. Yeah, you would find pretty unusual fluctuation. I don't recall any radiological variation. That does appear in other phenomena as well. Classically, the Bentwaters case is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever it is seems to defy our ability to quantify it.
Mm-hmm. And you did mention it, so I've got to ask, even though I don't think we have time to really get into it, but you did mention psychokinesis and training it. So are you saying that you've witnessed, the ability of people to move objects with their mind?
Absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
That's probably a whole other story, but
I
used to actually teach. Jack Hauck had come up with a means of, it got to be known as spoon bending parties, or we call PKMB, psychokinesis metal bending, and it was based on the work of Uri Geller. But we then had something that was teachable.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the problem here was, did it happen 100% of the time? No. But there were examples where we had very, very dramatic experiences that happened, in front of me and many, many others, and highly, highly credible witnesses. And if you use the mechanistic model of the world, one of the things you have to say is, okay, if this metal bent, where did the energy come from? And I'm talking here about the kinds of things, metal bending, where there's no physical force applied. And you really cannot come up with an explanation.
Mm-hmm. Were you able to do it?
Not well. I've had some things happen. But as I said, I was able to teach the process and observe others that had some pretty spectacular events occur.
Mm-hmm. Wow, that's amazing. But I guess getting back to the ranch, some final questions. Do you feel that, I know Bob Bigelow has sold the ranch, so it might not have, I have no idea how expensive of an effort this investigation into the ranch was, but do you believe he felt it was money well spent in the end?
I'm sorry, you'd have to ask him.
Mm-hmm.
I have no idea. I was not even aware that he actually sold the ranch, so I had heard.
Yeah.
There were other folks in there. Probably the biggest expenditure, however, would have been on salary for those of us working there.
Mm-hmm. So,
I mean, again, it was a working ranch and maintained, its property value. So,
mm-hmm. So, and the family that he bought the ranch from, I understand, stayed to work the ranch for a period of time. Is that correct?
A short period of time, yes.
Mm-hmm, before leaving, and then I guess after that,
they were terribly harassed by the community. Things mm-hmm. did not go well.
Wow.
Wife lost her job in the bank directly related to that. The kids were getting harassed in school as these stories became known. So, yeah, the public is not kind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I guess that's...
On one side, you have people who say, wow, isn't that interesting? But mm-hmm. the reality is that, liable to bite you.
Yeah. Yeah, these stories lately, there's a couple of stories that came up this week, and that's why I thought it would be good to talk about this. Well, in the last few weeks, George Knapp, of course, who wrote the book Skinwalker, or The Hunt for Skinwalker, has kind of put those on his Facebook, and that's how I became aware of them. It's by the Winta...
Yeah, I saw that on his posts as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and one of those is about...
I...
Mm-hmm.
No, I was going to say, I would really emphasize for folks that are interested to get those George's and Colin's book.
And to not go to the ranch, and that was the whole point, it seems like, that prompted these stories, is that, in fact, the title of the first one that came out on September 24th, of the two recent stories written by the UB Media, is Skinwalker Ranch Activity Shifts from Paranormal to Prosecutable, because these guys are no longer experiencing, or haven't experienced, at least that they've shared with the public, any paranormal experiences, the new owners, I mean. However, they're getting harassed by humans who keep trying to come on to the ranch or just walk around the ranch, and it's really been a difficult ordeal for them.
It was unfortunate from the start. It's one of the reasons the general location was not well known while we were there. Some people figured it out. But, it's unfortunately that these, quote, researchers are, you know, just really screwing it up. And this is private property. It belongs to somebody else. They have every right to maintain their privacy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, in the end, I don't know if you have any comments about – I find it unfortunate how much of this field treats Bob Bigelow, because I really feel that his efforts were not in vain and not unsuccessful, in that I've been able to interview George and Colm Kelleher and Eric Davis and others who are very, very credible people who did some great work and made a genuine effort to investigate this phenomena, and all walked away, like you've expressed, saying, wow, whatever this is was a real intelligence that just outsmarted us. And that alone is very valuable, I think, for all of us looking into this topic. I mean, we wouldn't know about this phenomena at this ranch if it wasn't for Bigelow's efforts. But unfortunately, it seems his legacy is and is not often treated well by the UFO community.
Oh, silly girl.
What's that?
If you remember the my slide that I use in most of my briefings, and it says you got to have three things if you're going to play. You better have a thick skin, because you're going to be attacked. You must understand conspiracy theory, because you're going to be part of it, whether you believe the conspiracy or not. And finally, for most people, you better have a day job, because you're not going to make a lot of money at it.
Amen to all three of those points. And amen to your entire book. I think it's one of the most important books in this field. It's definitely out of the top 10, I think, you know, people need to understand. Just because you outline things like this, you know, that are important observations of the field overall, and something you do need to understand when you're diving in, because, like you said, you will get attacked.
Yeah, the UFO community is not kind. They tend to be a bit cannibalistic.
Yeah, you don't have to worry about attacks from aliens or Bigfoot or any other paranormal phenomena. The attacks by the humans are the ones you want to look out for.
Right.
All right. Well, thank you so much for coming on the show again. Your website is johnbalexander.com, where people can read more. They can see your book and how to get there, and also follow all of your adventures around the world. I was just thinking today, you're a person who they ought to make a reality television show about, because you're all over the world doing exciting things lately. What, swimming with the sharks?
Yeah, we're just back from diving with the great white sharks.
Yeah.
It's quite amazing.
Pretty exciting stuff. So thank you very much.
Okay, thank you, Alejandro.
Thank you so much to John Alexander for being on the show. Remember, you can find his book along with all of his information at johnbalexander.com. And all of his adventures, he's all over the world. He's doing cool stuff. He's swimming with the sharks. He's talking to gurus and doing all kinds of crazy stuff. And he'll be talking about a lot of this crazy stuff at the 2017 UFO Congress. So definitely come and check it out. So I personally Love hearing from John. So thank you so much for being on the show. And the Skinwalker Ranch is just such a fascinating topic. Really incredible stuff. And it's really good. There's a lot of conjecture out there about Bob Bigelow, his intentions and such. And I think it's best to get it from the horse's mouth. I mean, when it comes to MUFON, sorry, folks, I was there. I was part of the board. I was one of the directors, not part of the board necessarily, but in the board meetings because I was a director with MUFON when they created that relationship. And I've spoken with many of the people involved with NIDS. And, you know, it's a genuine effort to investigate strange phenomena. And I think that's fascinating and really cool. But it's great to hear from the people who have this inside information. And one of those is George Knapp. So remember, if you don't know much about this ranch and you're thinking, what the heck? This sounds crazy. Go check out the book, Hunt for the Skinwalker, by George Knapp and Colm Kelleher. Colm is another guy I've spoken with. Great guy. He still works for Bob Bigelow. So go check out that book. You can find it, I believe, definitely find it on Amazon, but I think you can find it in many of the bookstores even to this day. So really, really, really good stuff. And, of course, come to the conference to listen to John speak. I don't know if I've told you all, too. I've posted practically all the speakers, so we have almost all the speakers listed. The last one is Erling Strand, who is a professor at the Oslo College and University, I think it's called, in Denmark, Usgard or something like that. I don't remember the name right now, but anyways, it's this university that is doing actual investigation of the Hesdalen Lights, which is one of the longest ongoing kind of UFO investigations and one of the few, if not the only, by an actual university. But Erling Strand will be coming from Norway to come and speak about the Hesdalen Lights, give you details, show you videos. I mean, there are videos of these UFOs that have been captured by these, you know, scientists and other investigators. So he will also be speaking at the UFO Congress. So we've got a great lineup. And, of course, I'll be telling you more about these speakers as time goes on. As you heard me talk about with Mark earlier, Martin earlier, we do have another UFO magazine video coming out. This will be more about UFO reporting by the government. So more about official UFO reporting you probably don't know about. Just evidence documenting that the government certainly has been interested in UFOs since 1969, despite what they've been telling the public. And it's right there in their own files. So how have they been reporting and investigating those? We'll get into that in the next video. So keep an eye out there. We did also have Michael Kleinitz putting together these videos from our archives of strange UFO photographs. So you can check that out. Michael has some new ones. So go check our YouTube for all of this crazy and wild. All of this crazy and wild stuff. Really, really good stuff out there. Also, if you want to read more about anything that Martin and I talked about in the UFO news earlier, you can go to openminds.tv. In fact, those stories we talked about, including all of the links to all of those WikiLeaks emails from Podesta that we talked about, really interesting developments, you can go find, and also links to like the Wall Street Journal story and other stories about all of this. So really, I got to say, you'll probably get the most information about Podesta and those links, those WikiLeaks at our site than any other site out there, openminds.tv. That's right, folks. So remember also some of the past lectures from the International UFO Congress you can find on our website. You can subscribe to our video portal for a very low monthly fee and get access to tons and tons of lectures and videos. And that's also where you can find out information about the UFO Congress. You can register. You can also go to UFOCongress.com. So we've got lots and lots of really cool stuff going on. We're just keeping busy, making sure to continue to have a steady stream of information coming to you all who we love so much. Thank you very much to Caleb Hanks for the open and close music. And finally, I want to thank you once again for listening to the show. I hope you have a wonderful week. We will talk to you soon. Adios, muchachos.